Successful Minds with Patricia Barnowski-Schneider, the show that takes you around the world to share interviews with some of the most successful and relevant people on the planet. Hear their stories and get the most important business lessons they have learned on their road to success, and get exclusive advice on how to implement their success into your life and business. Successful Minds with Patricia Barnowski-Schneider is brought to you by the Strategic Advisor Board and your host, Patricia Barnowski-Schneider.
Hello, and welcome back to Successful Minds. I'm your host, Patty Baranowski-Schneider. Today, I'm joined by Charles Reed, CPA, a U.S. tax court practitioner, founder and CEO of Get Payroll, and a veteran. So welcome, Charles. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, Patty, I'm a Midwestern boy. First of all, thank you for having me. I grew up in Iowa, went to high school, got out of high school, wasn't ready for college, joined the United States Marine Corps, spent 4 years, including 2 years overseas. Came back, was stationed in Kansas City, met and married my wife. Best thing I ever did. She was 10 years older than I was and had 5 kids when I married her. Okay. I claim insanity, but we were married for 45 years before she passed. After I got out of service, I worked for a while and then went to college. Got my BBA, my MBA, sat for and passed my CPA exam while still in graduate school. Nice. Went to work for Texas Instruments. Spent 15 years in the corporate world, decided I was never going to get to the top. I didn't have the political skills. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to stab people in the back and toss them off the ladder. So Ruth and I started our own company. I'd grown up in a family business, so I thought that was the thing to do, and I thought it was a natural thing to work with your wife. By the way, it's not. Working with your wife is an unnatural act. But we made it work. And we started that some 30... Oh, my God. Let's see. This is 2024. We started in 91, so it was 33 years ago. And continue to grow it to this day.
Wow, that's awesome. It's actually a very nice story, unique story. All right. So now, introduction to payroll mastery. So with your over 50 years of financial leadership and your founding of Get Payroll, what inspired you to specialize in payroll services, and how has that industry evolved since you started?
Well, when I started out as a CPA, I basically hung out my own shingle and was an accountant doing taxes and financials and consulting for small businesses. And as a sideline, we had payroll. And I liked the payroll. And we found payroll was a good way to sell accounting services. And payroll, frankly, was an easier sell. And by being an expert and a professional and a CPA, I brought more to the table than most of my competitors did. So here about a dozen years ago, I sold off the accounting portion of the business to my partner, which we'd taken on, and I kept the payroll because I like that business. It's all business to business. It's not business to consumer. We don't have the same fights that we do. We have fights with the IRS, but they're not the same, and personal taxes can get really, really contentious. Business taxes are a little easier, and employment taxes are a different category, and I enjoy it. And I've become quite an expert in employment tax law, which is why I became a U.S. tax court practitioner to better service my clients. So it's just a field I enjoy, and I'm good at it. I'm one of a handful of employment tax experts in the country. Right. And by being a CPA and a U.S. tax court practitioner and a compliance expert, we provide a service to our clients that our competitors just don't. It gives us a unique selling proposition.
That's awesome. Because, there's so many people doing the same things out there. So having that unique skill that no one else has is awesome. But I guess tell us a little bit, because I know you're a U.S. tax court practitioner, but maybe shed a little light on what exactly that means.
Okay. There's about 200 of us in the U.S. I am able to practice in U.S. tax court as if I were an attorney without being one. Wow. I have a bar card from the U.S. tax court. The U.S. tax court is the only U.S. court where a non-attorney can actually practice. So I can represent my clients, argue cases in front of the judge, handle appeals, and all kinds of things. Now, in reality, 95% of all U.S. tax court cases are settled pre-court. So it's a matter of I'm able to file a petition for my clients, write it up, send it in. It immediately goes to docketed appeals, which means I get very sophisticated people in the IRS that I can work with. And normally they look at it and they go, oh, okay. Because I haven't gotten it to somebody in the service that can make those kinds of decisions and understands some of the nuances of the law and procedures and policy and so on and so forth. And when I can get it in front of somebody like that, normally the problem gets solved because I don't take frivolous cases to tax court, only ones where the IRS has made a mistake.
Wow, that's actually pretty interesting. I never heard of that before, so I learned something new every day.
And
Nice.
I, as far as I know, I am the only U.S. tax court practitioner that operates in the employment tax payroll area.
Wow, that's actually really unique.
It's
And I
a lot of
guess,
fun.
yeah, well, sure. I'll take your word for it. Now, can
Yeah,
you?
well.
Well, it's one of those things. It's funny because years and years ago, when I was in high school and was working part time in an office, I was working for an accounting firm, and you have to have that passion for the numbers. And I actually had it. I thought it was so cool, like trying to, do books, and you're off by like 5 cents, and you're racking your brain, like we can't close this till these 5 cents are spent on it. Yeah, so that is unique, but it's definitely a skill that not everybody has.
Well, I like you, and I use that as an example. If you will spend 2 hours tracking down 5 cents in a bank reconciliation, you'll probably make a good accountant.
I was a teenager back then, but yeah, I don't know if my patients would survive that these days. Yeah. Now, can you share some pivotal moments in your journey from a Vietnam vet to becoming a successful entrepreneur and CEO? And how have your experiences shaped your approach to business and leadership?
Sure. The Marine Corps teaches leadership, but they teach leadership in a hierarchical organization. Everybody is either subordinate or superior to everybody else, period. There are no equals, period. There are no equals. You either tell them what to do or they tell you what to do. That doesn't work in the civilian world. So I had to relearn that. But the Marine Corps teaches leadership techniques. And one of them that I've carried forward is a simple phrase, mission, men, self. You accomplish the mission. Whatever it takes, you accomplish the mission. Then you take care of your men. Then you take care of yourself. So our mission is to deliver payroll accurately and timely every time for our clients. So we do whatever it takes. We bend over backwards to make that happen because that's the mission. And then I take care of my employees and I take care of my clients because they're important to me, both sets. I can't do the work without my employees. If everybody just dropped dead tomorrow, I'd be out of business. I mean, I couldn't do it myself. There's no way. So they're very important to me, as are my clients because they provide revenue. And only after they're taken care of do I worry about myself. Entrepreneurs that pay themselves first make a mistake. You should pay yourself last. You should be the last person that gets taken care of. That's one of the tenets of Marine Corps leadership. And I do that. One of my biggest pluses, my wife was a people person. I married her while I was still in the service, and she helped me immensely in dealing in the civilian world with out the hierarchical strata that goes with the military. Everybody loved Ruth. Even people she didn't like thought she was their best friend. So she taught me a lot, and she was wonderful at helping vet new employees, whether they fit into the mold or not. So I miss her terribly.
She's gone long.
8 years.
Still, I'm sure it feels like yesterday.
Yeah.
But it is nice when you have that, yin and yang, because you have your sense of what has to get done, and she's kind of that mediocre middleman saying, no, we have to do it this way. So that's actually really unique.
It is, except in a marriage, I'm a great believer in happy wife, happy life.
Right.
So, she did the house is run her way, and we, if she says she wants it done this way, and we do it that way. in business, I was the professional. I was the accountant, and she was the people person. So she'd want to do things a certain way. And I go, no, we can't do it that way. We have to do it this way. And that took some time to understand that we had one set of interaction at work and a different set at home. Okay. At home, it was her way. At the office, I'm the CPA. Things have to be set up a certain way.
It's probably a learning
And
curve for her too.
oh, it was. One of the things we had to do, she used to, at we go to bed and she'd have one more thing to get off her chest. So she'd tell me about it. She'd roll over and go to sleep. And I'd be worried about it until 2 or 3 in the morning. So we came to an agreement. It took us about a year to work this out, that after dinner, no more business. Now, that meant for some very late dinners some nights, but after dinner, no more business.
No, I mean, that's actually really smart. It's a tricky thing too, because even with remote, I've been doing remote long before COVID, and that was one of the tricky things, because before you had your commute. Once you left the office, that was it. Nothing. Now you're pretty much on call from the minute you roll out of bed to the minute you go back in. And it's good, it's bad, but it's, I get it. A little tricky to separate it.
Yes, it is.
Now tell us your latest book, the payroll book, A Guide for Small Businesses and Startups. It's gained significant attention. So what made it motivated you to write the guide, and what are key takeaways that you hope readers will gain from it?
Well, I get questions all the time from clients and potential clients and just people who have problems. And I found there was nothing out there as a reference guide for small businesses. Big businesses have professionals on staff. The only real guide to payroll was the payroll source from the APA, the American Payroll Association, and it was $600. And it was designed to train payroll processors, okay, to become certified. So it really wasn't a reference book for the masses. So I said, I looked around and there was just nothing. And I said, I'll write something. Well, 2 years later,
Well, obviously there was a need for it, so that's great.
there was, and we've got quite a following, and we sell more than I expected, frankly. I haven't gotten rich off of it. Don't misunderstand me. It's a very niche book, but it's basically 30 years of wisdom distilled down to 95,000 words. It doesn't solve every problem, but it gives you a lot of handles on things. It gives you a lot of tips. There's some horror stories in there. It really is a reference guide. And if you get into that and you find, wow, I just really need more help than that, my number is in the conclusion of the book. So
Oh,
call
wow.
me.
You're a glutton for punishment.
Hey, if they're reading their book, they have payroll. If they have payroll, they're a potential client. I want to talk to them, okay?
That's
There's
good.
5 million businesses in this country. I would love to know every one of them by name and who
It
runs their payroll. Believe me.
is true, though. There is no, anybody starting a business, they always say you have your business plan, they tell you all the basic stuff, advertising, but there is nobody guiding you for a payroll. They just interesting. Now tell us from your perspective, what are the most common payroll related challenges that small businesses face, and what advice can you offer to overcome the hurdles?
There's a couple of things to start out with. First of all, you don't know what you don't know. As you were just saying, people don't tell you how to do payroll. One of the big problems that entrepreneurs make is not determining who's a independent contractor and who's an employee. And that can be extraordinarily expensive if you make the wrong decision. And it's not something you get to choose. There's a whole body of law that specifies who is an employee and who's a contractor and all the nuances that go through it. Now, the law is changing. In fact, it's changing again next week. There is a new regulation from the Labor Department under Fair Labor Standards Act of what constitutes an independent contractor. And it's going to be a mess because it is a major change and it's going to take years for the courts to parse this all out to exactly what it means. So you've got to have, if you're not involved in it, you need to have somebody that is that can guide you. So be very careful about independent contractors. You just can't pay them all cash or write them a check. It doesn't work that way. Some of them are employees. You got to withhold. You got to pay your share of the taxes. Then you have to do all your filings, all your deposits, both federal, state, and sometimes local. And if you don't know what those are, when they catch you, they don't care. Ignorance
Yeah,
is no excuse.
the IRS is not somebody to mess around with.
No, I deal with the IRS literally every day. And, it's 100,000 people. Most of them are pretty good people. They're all mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, brothers, sisters. They're people, but they're civil servants. They work for the government. They work their 40 hours a week and go home. They're not motivated by profit. They're not motivated by growth. They're not motivated by the same things entrepreneurs are motivated by. And a lot of them aren't as well trained as they should be for the job they've been put in. And people are transferred among jobs all the time, and they have to learn them. So in many cases, when I'm dealing with the IRS, I'm teaching them the law and sometimes their own procedures, which I have access to. They're all on the line. So it's you can encounter, and I do it all the time, IRS people who maybe they are nice people, but they don't understand what they're supposed to be doing. They misinterpret the law and the regulations. For instance, you cannot be penalized for a simple mistake. Yet the IRS issues in 19 prior to COVID, $16 billion of employment tax penalties, many of which got abated because they shouldn't have been issued. And we get abated all the time because the IRS thinks everything's gross negligence. And you've got to get a judge to say that it's not, or get a senior administrator at the IRS to say, no, that's a simple mistake. We're not going to penalize you. So I tell my clients, dealing with the IRS, it's like sales. It's a whole series of no's followed by a single yes. So you appeal, you appeal, you appeal, you appeal, you appeal, you appeal, until you get somebody that says, okay. Then you say thank you and get the hell out
So they need
of
somebody to explain this because it is true, that they don't know. I remember years and years ago, somebody I knew had was an independent contractor and they had a business name and all that stuff. And nobody told them that when they stopped, you had to go through the IRS to cancel this. So they just dropped the business, closed the bank account, and all was good. And then all of a sudden, like 8 years later, they get this massive bill from the IRS saying, well, we didn't hear from you, so we going to assume what you make and you owe now like $20,000. And they're like, what are you talking about? So anyway, trying to get an answer, it was 1,001 phone calls to nowhere, phone calls to nowhere, that blah blah blah. And then they were okay, we got one person, they were on the phone for forever, they were going to help you, they were going to mail a form, never got a form, go through the whole process again, only to find out that person shouldn't have even said that. It just this went on for almost a year to finally get that one person who says, okay, we'll squash it. Here's the form. You have to again pay a fee to mail it in and blah blah blah. But nobody tells you this stuff. I mean, this is just basic things that we didn't know in dealing with, the blind leading the blind sometimes with the IRS. This person had like an ulcer by the time it was done. But having someone like you who understands and knows all these laws is would have saved them a whole lot of grief.
Yes.
So now tell us, how has technology transformed the payroll industry? And what innovations do you see on the horizon that could further revolutionize how businesses manage payroll?
Well, technology has changed immensely. I mean, it used to be phone, it used to be payrolls would be called in by phone. Then we went to faxes, and that was wonderful most of the time. Sometimes faxes were hard to read. Now it's almost all electronic. They put the hours in into our system on their computer, and we process everything and then make sure all the money moves and everybody gets paid, all the deposits are made, all the forms are filed. That's been an amazing thing. We actually do more payrolls with less people, which allows us to keep our costs down and keep our prices down for our clients. If we were doing this on old technology, our prices would have to be higher to cover our costs. So Technology, computers, the internet, all that has just been wondrous for us. Now, the most recent Paytech magazine, which is the house organ of the American Payroll Association, which is our trade journal, is talking about AI and payroll.
Really?
So it's coming down the pike. Things are changing. Things are happening. Technology continues to change. We advertise in social media. Well, when I started, social media didn't exist.
Right.
I've got a whole group of people who do that because I'm an old whatever. And I think Facebook is good for sending baby pictures to grandma. Other than that, I don't see any use for it, but that's me. But my people do and use it and advertise on it and communicate on it and so on and so forth. So technology continues to change and you have to be on top of it. And I'm on top of it or I've got people who are on top of it.
Right. It is true though, because everything nowadays, there's an app for everything. I mean, even it's good and it's bad, because one, it sends reminders, it makes life easier. Like you say, you don't have to deal, like even with accounting. Now, years ago, you had to print out your bank statement, circle everything, write it in. And now you can have, like, say, QuickBooks, it'll work for them. Not maybe just saying things like that, where it's all electronic, it downloads all the info to you and things like that. But at the same time, it's easier to hack. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of downsides to it too, but like you say, the world's evolving and you kind of have to keep on top of it or scary stuff.
When I first started, it was paper and ink ledgers, and computers were just coming in. So yeah, the world's changed.
For sure. I tell this all the time with people, like even when I was in college, we were just learning computers in the senior year of high school. And like when I was in college, you went to the library, you took out books, outdated material, but the world's changed now. I mean, you're just talking to your phone and within seconds you've got, your whole essay written. It's just ridiculous.
When I built the house, I built in a library, and I have probably 10,000 volumes in it. I haven't bought a book to read in probably 3 years, a paper book. I read them all. I have Kindle Unlimited. You're welcome, Amazon. And for $10.81 a month, I have access to millions of books. It's incredible.
It does make our lives a lot easier in a lot of ways, but it's going to be interesting to see. But I didn't know AI was now getting involved in payroll, so this is going to be interesting because it's not a foolproof either, so this will be interesting.
It's going to be fascinating.
Yeah. Now tell us, as a U.S. tax core practitioner, what unique challenges have you encountered, and how has this role influenced your work in payroll and tax services?
Well, the nice thing about being a U.S. Tax Court practitioner is it allows me to get to the end of all the standard appeals and then get another bite at the apple for my clients. I file a petition with the court, and it starts all over again, but this time with more sophisticated, more knowledgeable, more expert people who want to settle the case. They don't want to go to court. So, yeah, it was a lot of work to become that. I spent 2 years studying and taking classes, and you have to go to DC. They give the test for it once every 2 years. In person at the U.S. Tax Court on a November morning in DC. And you have to go there. Less than 10% of the people that take the test pass. So it's not an easy thing to get, but it is so powerful. And the other thing I can do is, since it's on my letterhead and when I'm dealing with appeals officers, I can say, hey, look, we're going to appeal this to the tax court. Let me send you a copy of the petition that we're going to file. And in it, I'll have all the law quoted, all the case law, all the cites, everything in there. And when they look at that, more than once, they've just geeked and given up on it and let me have what I wanted.
Yeah, you obviously know the law, you know what you're doing. It's probably they are going to have to investigate and study it and learn it. So, wow. So you have
Lots of
that
times I bring
muscle.
up, I have the hammer. lot of times I'll bring up cases that they're not aware of. And if they go read it, they'll go, oh, I guess he is right. Who knew?
Because, like you say, a lot of these folks are probably young, not many years of experience, and don't really being get bounced around. They probably don't have all the experience and knowledge of, what
Right.
led
And
you to all of this.
a lot of them don't read the case law and study it that, they have a set of procedures they follow and they've been told what to do. And sometimes what they've been told is either wrong or out of date. It happens.
That's some good stuff. Now, with the best experience leading various teams and companies, how do you describe your leadership style? What principles do you believe are essential for effective leadership?
Well, again, I'm my people are critical. The business is going to them. When I retire or I die, whichever comes first, they're getting the business because they helped me build it. They helped me become successful. They should benefit from it. I'm not going to sell it to one of my major competitors and retire. That's not fair to them. They were critical. I've got people who've been with me 25 years. You have to take care of your people. You have to understand that your job is not as an entrepreneur to be the smartest person in the room. That's not your job. Your job is to hire the smartest person in the room. Okay? As an entrepreneur, you learn to delegate. And when you delegate responsibility, you have to delegate authority to go with that. Delegating responsibility without authority is just asking for problems. So you have to have good people and you have to trust them. And if you don't trust them, get rid of them. I'm sorry. I mean, if they're not capable of accepting their authority, don't give them the responsibility. Not everybody can do every job. You have to analyze your people and understand them, work with them. You should know who they are and what they are about and how they think. It's all people stuff. I mean, which is hard for an accountant, but it's what my wife taught me. She was a people person, and management is people. Obviously, there's setting goals and setting, company policy and so on and so forth. But that all comes down to what your people can accomplish.
That's actually really nice, though, because a lot of companies, you're just seen as a dollar. You're just they there's no, no, I don't even know what the word is. There's no, no connection. You're just somebody here. You're paid to do the job. Shut up and do it. And it's nice when you have somebody who's actually saying you were with me, and I'm taking care of you the same way you've taken care of me.
That's part of the reason I got out of the corporate world, because it's very cold and run by people, in many cases, who shouldn't be running companies.
I've seen it myself. Now, we kind of touched on this a little bit, but how has your service and experience as a Vietnam vet influenced your approach to entrepreneurship and business management?
Well, being a combat veteran, you learn a lot of things about yourself. The first time I got in a firefight and that bullet went past my left ear, not my right ear, my left ear. And I asked myself what the I was doing there. Life is short. You have to enjoy life. You have to enjoy what you do. And the people that you work with and work for you should enjoy life as well. Life's too short not to have fun. Life's too short to be serious all day, every day. Sure, there's some serious things you have to deal with. I've lost a wife and a daughter. I've gone through grief, terrible things. But life goes on, and if you survive, you've got to deal with it. So you just, get up the next day and do what needs to be done and go home, eat dinner, go to sleep, get up and do it again. It's just one step at a time. And the military teaches that in a lot of ways that, it's one step, it's forward march, left, right, and you'll be amazed how far you'll get over time. I tell budding entrepreneurs, one of my my favorite sayings is entrepreneurship is not a sprint, it's a marathon. You've got to keep after it. You've got to keep going mile after mile after mile. You'll be amazed. You'll get to the end at some point. You'll get there, but it takes time.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because in the world we're in today, everybody wants everything yesterday. So people do need to realize right. that it's a process. You know, it's not a 1, 2, 3.
You're not going to be Bill Gates, mm-hmm. okay? You're not going to be Elon Musk, okay? You're not going to be, I promise you. It's just like the high school football player. You're not going to be Mean Joe Green. You're not going to be Aaron Rodgers, okay? You ain't going to do it. Mm-hmm. You probably won't make it in college, and you definitely are not going to become a pro. So, no, it's one step at a time. Do what you're capable of. Continue to work at it. Grow, study, educate yourself. Get smarter. Get more knowledgeable. Get more skillful. Get more efficient. All those things work to make you more money, make you more valuable, whether you're working for yourself or somebody else. The more skills you have, the more you're worth.
Yeah. Now, good advice.
Not everybody should be an entrepreneur. Some people should go work for the Internal Revenue Service. You know, if you want a 40-hour-a-week job and retire at 30 years or whatever it is and have a pension and take your weekends off and get your 30 days vacation, you know, go to work for somebody. There's nothing wrong with that. There's millions and millions of people who do. But if you want to be an entrepreneur, I was on a panel one time and somebody asked me about work-life balance and I cracked up. I started laughing. I said, for an entrepreneur, particularly at first, you know, the first 10 years or whatever, there is no work-life balance. It's work. And if you're not willing to do that and you don't have a, and your spouse is not willing to put up with that, it's not going to succeed. So don't do it. But there, you know, for a starting entrepreneur, there is no such thing as work-life balance. It's 60, 70, 80, 90 hours a week. And that's just what you have to do to get ahead. Now, at some point in time, things get easier. You get a staff, you delegate things off, you have other people to take on responsibilities, and life gets a little easier. But that takes a while.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, everybody wants everything overnight. And I've seen people do that where they start a company and, you know, they're looking. And it's a shame because, especially with social media, you're constantly getting bombarded with all of these things. Become a millionaire in 6 months and blah, blah, blah. And people like, then they're frustrated because that's not happening. It's not real. And when you see all these people selling these courses, how do you think they became a millionaire? Think of how many millions of people bought this course. That's all he's doing or she's doing. Yeah.
It's, yeah. If you want to get rich quick, buy one of those courses, repackage it, and sell it to somebody else. Yeah.
Exactly. That's what it was. Based on your extensive experience, what critical financial advice would you give to startups and new entrepreneurs to help them succeed in today's competitive environment?
Okay, one of the things that when you're sitting down and building your business plan, you determine all the potential costs that you're going to encounter so you can determine how much capital you need. And I have a rule of thumb. When you get done with that and you've calculated the max amount of capital you're going to need to get this business up and going, double it. It may be more, but if you'll double it, you have a really good chance of having enough capital because you will never think of everything. There'll be things that come out of the woodwork that you never conceived of and will be costs and expenses. So it's incredible. Everybody wants their shekel. Everybody wants their pound of flesh. And it's just, there's always something else that you didn't think of. Okay, so that's a critical thing. Make sure you have a banker, an accountant, a lawyer, a payroll company that you can trust and work with, but don't let them make decisions for you. But those are a couple of things to think about.
I mean, when I started out, I didn't know half of the things that I know today, and it was a similar thing. I didn't have a lawyer, you know. And I had an accountant, but they weren't doing payroll. They were just, you know, doing my end of year taxes. And what wound up happening is it's the stupid world we live in. There was another competitor took me to court to sue me for unfair competition, which was ridiculous because they don't own marketing. So, but at the end of the day, it was meant to kind of discourage me. It still cost me legal fees, time, stress. You know, this went on for almost a full year. All the legal fees, it got thrown out because, like I said, there was no real case. But anybody else could have been like, oh my God, I don't can't afford a lawyer. I can't do this. And he's trying to sue me. I'm out. You know, but I was like determined because I'm like, what are you suing me for? But again, these are expenses I would have never even thought to consider. But, you know,
exactly.
They just get thrown at you. Yeah. So that's how I was looking ahead. What future projects or ambitions are you most excited about? How do you plan to continue impacting the small business and startup ecosystem?
Well, we're continuing to grow. We're continuing to market. We're enhancing. We're actually adding right now some new software that'll help us market our services to more small businesses. And we like the small business. We like the under 20, under 50 employees. That's where we're after. We don't go after big companies. You know, we have a few and we service them nicely, but they fall into our lap one reason or another, normally by referral. So we market to small businesses, and we're growing and continuing to grow. So it's fun. It's interesting. Marketing changes. We do a lot of videos. We just shot a Ghostbuster parody based on the fact that the new Ghostbusters is coming out here shortly.
That's awesome.
Oh, we do a lot of fun videos. If you go on our YouTube channel, there's a lot of good ones. And sometimes it's amazing. We did one on Federal Unemployment Tax Act.
Okay.
Michael is snickering over here. Okay, my videographer, because he knows where I'm going. And so the acronym for that is FUTA, FUTA.
Okay.
Well, FUTA is also the acronym for a Japanese transsexual pornography.
All righty then.
So that is one of our biggest viewed videos, and the comments are a real hoot.
That's awesome. I'm going to have to include that in this podcast now. But that is awesome because it keeps you real and it shows that you're not just all business. You can be a real person too, you know.
I love our Halloween one where the IRS appears as the horde of the undead.
That's awesome. Whoever does your marketing is doing a great job.
I will let him know.
That's awesome. Now, anything else you want to talk about that we didn't already touch on?
No, that's pretty good. You've got, you know, it's fun. If there's any other questions you have, I'm more than happy to expound on. I've got an opinion on everything.
No, I think this is awesome. I mean, so you have your book out. We all know that you'd like to target smaller businesses. I'm going to include all of your contact info.
I will make one offer, though, for your listeners. If they would like a copy of my book, if they will go to thepayrollbook.com and enter the discount code podcast, we'll ship them at no cost, free of charge, no shipping, no handling, a copy of the book as long as supplies last.
Oh, that's awesome. You guys, don't hesitate. I'm telling you, I mean, if you are just starting out, you definitely need it. And even if you've been there a little while, listen to what this man knows. He obviously knows a lot more than we think. So follow his lead. That's awesome. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Well, I mean, I'm going to include your contact info, but how can people get a hold of you and learn more about you?
Obviously, we're at Get Payroll on the web. My email is CJR, Charles J. Reed, at getpayroll.com. And, you know, if you've just got a quick question, 972-353-0000, punch 1 for payroll and ask for Charles.
So you can get the book as a presenter too. Well, thank you again for being on the show. Again, that was Charles Reed. So thanks for listening to Successful Minds with Patty B. And you can miss an episode by subscribing. So thank you again.
Thank you for listening to Successful Minds with your host, Patricia Barnowski-Schneider. Please leave your feedback and visit strategicadvisorboard.com to get the latest and greatest business advisement on the planet. Follow us on social media for updates, and we'll see you on the next episode.